And welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here at CBSSports.com. This is Greg Simluk, and I'm joined by Aaron Brown and Ross Devenport. Ross, welcome back to the Odd Man Rush.
Thank you. It's been a while.
Yes, we'll get to Ross from a fantasy perspective in just a little bit, but first we're going to go over some hot topics and stories going on in hockey. And we're going to start off our show today with some talk about the Olympics. Brian Burke says he'll have Team USA decided very shortly. So we kind of want to go over some players first part of this season that have maybe played themselves onto the team or at least into consideration, those that have played themselves out of contention, and maybe those who, like it or not, are not going to be there due to injuries. So let's start with Aaron. And Aaron, why don't you give us some players that you've taken note of first part of the season?
Well, I think the two that stand out are Ryan Miller and Craig Anderson. And I think going into the year, we felt Ryan Miller was going to be competing with Tim Thomas, who I'll get to shortly. But I think now, as far as the starting role goes, it's got to be either one of those. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And another one to throw in there, too, when I was thinking about this, it didn't quite pop up. But Jonathan Quick is really in the mix, too. So who knows if Thomas even gets consideration. He's done okay, but you know, he's on my fantasy team, and I haven't been that pleased. And
right.
Boston's just not the same as what they were last year.
But do you think they'll go with more of the known quantity, you know, with Thomas than they would with Quick, who's, you know, not really quite sure what you have with him yet.
Yeah, but I think with the third goaltender, I would be surprised if he does play. I mean, it's going to be a total of maybe, I think, six games if they make it all the way. It's really not a lot of time, so I can't see how there would be any sort of rotation to get a third goalie in there. But I would have to say you go with either Anderson or Miller based on who's hotter going into February, and you kind of pray that neither is on a slump at that point. And then, you know, if Quick's your backup. But
sure.
I mean, it wouldn't, I don't think it would hurt to have a younger guy in there because, you know, assuming the NHL goes back, you know,
so that he knows what it's all about,
exactly.
Knows what the preparation's like, knows what you have to do from a regular season perspective to then move into an Olympic situation because it's a totally different preparation when you know that your season's going to stop, you're going to be thrust into a different environment, and then you have to come back and go through that process of the regular season all over again.
Yeah, so
yeah, that's a good point.
I think that, you know, again, at this point, Miller's been playing outstanding. So I'd probably lean with him to be, based on the veteran thing, ironically.
Well, plus he's just playing fantastic hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes that helps. You know, just actually doing your job well is a good thing, especially when the people that get to make the decisions as to who goes and who plays are noticing.
Yeah. As far as some guys up front, too, that kind of stood out to me were R.J. Umberger and James Van Riemsdyk. You know, I know the Flyers have had a tough situation in Van Riemsdyk's on a little bit of a slump, but he seems to have adjusted well to playing in the NHL.
Okay.
And he is a young talent. I think he might be one that maybe makes the team, doesn't see a lot of ice time, but he's got the potential that maybe if you stick him with some really, you know, stud players. And I guess now, you know, with Umberger, he's kind of come back, I think, to the form that he showed
When
he was in Philadelphia. Yeah, so I think that was something. I think he's definitely on the radar to bring some toughness, and he, you know, can chip in some goals here and there. So I think
Really, you know, looking at the potentials, who's already been to the camps, and looking at who has made some changes, it's almost really obvious, if that's not an oxymoron, that it's going to come down to what the coaching staff wants, like the playing style.
Yes.
Because you've got your guys that, you know, Tortorella likes to call it, says has jam.
Mm-hmm.
A guy like Umberger would fit into
yes.
that category. But then you've got, you know, your faster guys that try to, you know, elude defenders as opposed to going through them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really going to come down to what do they already have? What are the known quantities? What can they bring to team, you know, to a team's national squad, and then what do you have left to fill in? So it really depends on who they've already penned in. Right? There, it's written in stone that XYZ players are already going. Because once you know that, then you can say, okay, while these guys both are having great seasons, we really need more of this.
And it's funny you say that because I think two guys I would say were maybe penciled in very, like, with very dark pencil.
Sure.
Not quite pen, but two guys. One was Brian Gionta and the other being David Booth. I think, you know, those guys you talk about, the ones who are quick and want to elude people, both have been injured for most of the season, a good chunk of it at least. And I honestly can't see how they might fit into the team, especially if, you know, they've been out of the mix for a while. Maybe there's just no question about it. You know, Brian Burke will say, well, we know that they've what they've done in the past. Let's go with them. But at the same time, you know, you look at like a guy like Booth and he's still recovering from a concussion. And
exactly.
You know, to have to go exercise for 15 minutes sometimes is a challenge for him.
Right.
So I don't know that they can necessarily count on him. So maybe even with those kind of situations, maybe they were going to have a little bit more of those quick, you know, fast, get behind the defense kind of guys, but maybe they're going to have to go with a little bit more physical guys and change the focus just a tad,
right?
Because they don't have the guys. Because let's face it, the U.S. is not as deep when it comes to that kind of player.
They're not as
for
deep,
the quick and.
But it seems like they've got more issues as to bubble players, right?
Yeah.
Whereas some of these other countries, certainly Canada, where their pool is large, I mean, it just comes down to really which excellent players are they going with.
Yeah.
Because they don't seem to have the issues per position or positionally that that Team USA seems to have. So looking, trying to think of some of these other countries, who else may be in that same boat that the United States is?
What, as far as the trying to just...
Yeah, like, you know, picking an identity and then having the players with which to back that up.
Well, I think, honestly, with, like, European squads, I think their identity just sticks. I don't for whatever reason, USA is always in a constant flux of what is our identity. I think, you know, Canada you always look at is tough and skilled. I think the Finns, and someone once took offense to this, I consider them very pesky. Because they're just always under your skin.
All because of Ruutu? Is that where that's coming from?
But it's not just Ruutu. I mean, Finns just...
I play. I kid. I have fun.
Okay. Well, and then the Swedes... The Swedes. That's... The Swedes. The Swedes are maybe not as tough, but...
Maybe
you know,
a little
they're
bit
very
more skilled than...
Yes.
Right,
and the Russians are, you know, very skilled... sometimes toughness eludes them. It varies. So with the U.S., I mean, they're in a big transitional period to where, you know, they could, with their youth, very much go with a very a younger, quicker, faster.
But with Brian Burke, is that the team that you get out on the ice?
What?
With Brian Burke, is that the team you're going
to
get?
No, I don't think there's the depth to do it.
Right.
I think that they have to be a little bit of a... They have to be very lunch pail. They have to be very much like, you know, 1980. They just have to pull it together, work their, you know, tail off, and that's the identity they need to have.
Right.
That's
there's
what
not
else?
Enough talent to win on talent alone, as the late great Herb Brooks said.
I think that you just nailed that one right there.
All right, so then let's leave that topic since we've clearly. Hit the nail on the head, and let's move over to someone that certainly will be in the lineup for Team Canada, but maybe debatable as to whether the starter, but will at least be on the roster, Marty Brodeur, tying the shutout record. And, you know, there's a lot been said about this over the years, right? Is he a system goalie, or is this the play of a great goaltender? And a lot of this comments been made, and Aaron, you brought up the point for Gretzky being prolific in a purely offensive era. We have a quote from Jacques Lemaire, who says it's harder for goalies to get shutouts now than 5, 10, or 15 years ago. So let's just use that as a jumping off point for some debate here. Let's first start off with Brodeur. I'll start off, and I'll just say... that I think you have to say there's somewhere in between where Marty lies. He's clearly a great goaltender. Mm-hmm. I don't care what kind of system you're playing in front of. The guy makes the big saves when he has to over the majority of his career. The last few years, maybe not so much. We can point back to that Montreal game and say, okay, here's a guy that's, you know, moving a little bit towards the end of his career. Mm-hmm. But still, the end of his career is still better than what most people can perform.
Yes.
So, but that being said, you have to credit some of his success to the defense that was laid in front of him and the mm-hmm. system of play. You know, you can't score if you don't have the puck.
Yes.
Barring some major fluke, incident or accident. So, playing the trap the way they did so successfully and so well, whether you like it or not, it doesn't matter.
It worked.
They worked it to perfection.
Yes.
And he benefited from that. I mean, I one of the things we're going to do later in the show is we're going to throw it out to you, our listeners and our users on CBSSports.com to, you know, ask us something that you want us to do some research on. There's something that Aaron already did some great research on that we're going to go over later in the show. But maybe this could be one of those things. How many times during his long stretch of success did he face less than 20 shots?
Gosh.
Or less than 25?
Are you trying to kill me with that? You guys played like how many games?
Well, I'm just right now I'm throwing it out rhetorically.
Yeah. I agree. There were tons of games where at the very least I'm sure there were a lot where there were less than 25. I think the mark is what, 30? People say, oh, they, you know, he had a pretty
an easy night, right? With less than 10
less
a period.
Than,
and how many of those were legitimate high percentage scoring chances?
Yeah,
probably even less.
Yes.
So, you know, he did have some help. But his work on the international stage and in the playoffs for the successful cup runs that they've had, you can't take away all the guy's, you know, incredible amount of accolades purely on defensive scheme.
Yeah.
Because there would be several of Marty Brodeur's in the era that he played and worked, because other teams ran that same system.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
He was clearly the most successful.
Well, the thing that I think with Brodeur, I definitely agree that there was the system played a huge role in what he is today. And since you were going to peg a lot of research on me, something to look up for me now since I'm not in front of the computer. Nicholas Backstrom, dig and see what his numbers are this year. And this was something that I thought of, you know, last year or after Lemaire was, you know, going to leave Minnesota. My thinking was, well, how well was Backstrom going to be doing without that, you know, successful defensive system in Minnesota? And obviously they're not having such a great season. Obviously they can't score. That's part of the problem. But, you know, let's face it, you need defense as well. So I think with Brodeur, the shutout record was something that nobody expected would happen, at least, you know, years ago when Sawchuk set that mark. But at the same time, yes, he did play in a more defensive era. I think that probably in the late 90s, it was a lot easier to get a shutout.
Sure.
But you know what? I think it's still tough to get a shutout. I don't think that it's I don't think it's just a cakewalk, because you are seeing more shots, but you know, they're still playing good defensive hockey in front of Brodeur. They still were, even after the lockout. And I don't really think until Sutter came in that they, you know, you were really starting to talk about, well, now they're showing a little bit more offense. I mean, the fact that Parise was a 40-goal scorer last year, that was something that was unheard of for years in New Jersey. So I think that, again, going back to the Gretzky argument, you know, Gretzky was in an era that was just pure offense. And, you know, if you're going to slap Brodeur and say, well, you played in a, you know, the dead puck era.
Sure.
Your shutouts don't really mean anything. Are you going to say the same about Gretzky? The fact that, you know, he played in an era that was, you know, where half the goaltenders looked like Denny Lemieux. Saying, oh, I missed that.
I know we've talked about it on the show before, but I love and hate to watch those old films where guys are taking shots. And it goes back even farther than the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But guys just taking shots from wherever on the ice, and, you know, the goalie kind of looks down and twists his skate as if that was the move he was making to try and save, and, oh, look at that, it went in. And, you know, and it doesn't mean that there weren't great goaltenders back, you know, during these times. It was just, you know, the evolution of the position, much of which can be, you know, a lot of credit given to Brodeur and the training that he had, you know, from the butterfly goalie, then the hybrid goalies, right? These guys that play a little bit of both. Like, they're not stand-ups. They're not strictly butterfly. And then, you know, the Dominik Hasiks who just, you know, flops successfully.
Yeah.
You know, it's flopping with a purpose. You know, I mean, you can't deny the guy's, you know, numbers. But, yeah, you know, what I try to do is, you know, you can measure – everybody plays by the same rules in the era that they're playing in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at somebody like Babe Ruth and he hit, you know, his home run total, and then you look at somebody like Maris who comes along and breaks that record, right? And then what you do is you look and say, okay, under the same rules, under the same competition, whether it was easier back then or not, where was the closest person to Babe Ruth? Way, way back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He was that far because that's how much better he was than the era he was playing in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you can kind of make the same argument for Gretzky. There were large offensive numbers coming in during that time, but nobody was doing it at the rate that he was.
Yeah.
And as, you know, skilled as he was and the assists and the goal scoring and, you know, the 39, 50 and 39, you know, I mean, there's just, when you look at a guy, like Marian Gaborik, who's had a great start to the season, right? And then you say, okay, if this was that year for Gretzky,
where
you know,
would
double
he be?
And
yeah.
a half or whatever, you know, the goal total that he's got. And then now you can get some sort of perspective, you know, as to what he was doing versus the competition that he was playing with.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the thing you have to do. And because that's why I can't stand people try to compare eras. You know, like
and
this player
the game
to that
evolves.
Player. It was is you know Babe Ruth better than Hank Aaron, better than Roger Maris, better than Barry Bonds, regardless of his potential use of enhancements.
but even that, I mean, you just take hockey. And
the game is the game has evolved. The equipment's evolved. The players, you know,
the training
skill
methods,
sets, training methods, everything. It's just that's why it's you know what you're better off just compare people to those they played against. Were they that much better than everybody else they played against?
That's fair.
That's fair. All right, so I'm two for two. Nail on the head.
I want to make a point about Brodeur.
Okay.
Just being a goalie in a different sport.
Yes,
sure,
yes. And an excellent goalie at that, I will say. Ross Devenport, a fantastic soccer goalie.
Football.
Thank you, Greg. making the point about the lack of shots. When I'm playing, the more shots I face, the better I get into the game.
Right.
And the better I play. The fewer shots I face, I get bored. My mind starts to drift elsewhere. I know these guys are pros, obviously, and are getting paid not to do that. But I think his numbers are just as spectacular as anybody, regardless of how many shots he's faced, because he has to pay attention a lot more than these other guys. And I'm sure he goes through periods where he doesn't face a shot for you know, five minutes or so.
And I think, regardless of the sport, you will find that to be true across the line from goaltenders. That, excuse me.
They want to see more.
It it helps them get in the game. You know, what if that the first real tough test you get is at a critical moment in the game and you're just not quite, you know, your legs aren't as loose, you know, your eyes aren't as sharp, your focus isn't where it needs to be because you haven't been tested yet. You know, it's great when the guys come and take 50 shots on you in a matter of 30 seconds when you're warming up, most of which are taken when you're not looking at them and they're shooting on the other side of the goal.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's not exactly getting you ready. You know, that's maybe some of your reflexes, some of your hand eyes getting, you know, taken care of there. But it's not really that game focus where you're trying to look between seven different sets of legs and skates and sticks, you know, and here comes this puck, you know, squeezing through every, you know, any inch possible that it can. And you have to be there for that. So, excellent point, Ross. Thanks for jumping in on that. And so let's stick with goaltenders since we're on goaltenders, and let's talk about some. There's some teams right now that are looking for some additional help.
Yes.
And there are some players that could potentially be available for these teams. So let's kind of get into a little bit of that discussion right now.
I would just like to preface this with some of these are rumors, some is speculation on my own part, just thinking. So don't be passing this off as fact. It's not. It's just all, it's speculation. But I guess I'll start off with the situation that's in New York, and I believe Rick DiPietro, he's been in the minors on his conditioning stint. Although, as we learned today...
Is he a rookie? I'm sorry.
This Rick DiPietro guy? No, not quite.
Poor Rick.
But he had to postpone, I believe, his last start in the minors, just feeling some tightness. But that poses an interesting situation, and I think we discussed this a couple weeks ago. What do the Islanders do? And my personal thought was they need to stick with three goalies. They need to keep Rolison. They need to keep Biron. But at the same time, I was thinking that maybe Biron could be really worth something trade-wise, that maybe it's, you know, don't try to dump him off. Don't just waive him, but try to find someone who wants a backup goalie. And there are a couple teams out there now who do need a goalie, one being Detroit. Their goaltending situation isn't great.
Sure.
And that's a situation for Detroit, as far as Biron goes, that really could work in their favor. He's not making a lot of, you know, money. He wouldn't be that huge of a cap hit. I believe he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season.
Right.
I think that Biron would be an improvement over Howard and Osgood. I wouldn't say he's so drastic that, you know, you can see him taking the Wings back to the Cup again, but he's a little bit more consistent, I think.
Okay.
Just more so than what you see Osgood doing, and Howard has never really thrilled the
Howard
Wings.
He's, you know, typical of that that goalie that comes up and he's unbelievable one night and then not so much the next.
So
and
I think
that's tough as an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, you've put some investment into this player and in getting them ready for the NHL, and here they come up and they say, hey, look at me, I'm capable, and then the next night, you know, not.
Yeah.
So it's tough. You know, do you let him play more continually by putting him back down and just have somebody that's a more traditional backup? And I think that's what a lot of this question and a lot of what's going on in the NHL has kind of gotten away from, is having that traditional backup.
Mm-hmm.
And then having the backup be the next guy.
Yeah, it's really the situation now, I think, in the NHL is kind of crazy, because you have a lot more teams that will find a goaltender like a Luongo or Kiprusoff or Lundqvist or Backstrom even, and they'll ride him for 70 games. And, you know, especially in this year, one of the guys I was going to mention was Lundqvist.
Right.
Some of these teams don't want to kill their goalies because, you know, they're probably going to go play in the Olympics. They have to get, you know, a backup in there to give a rest every now
right.
and then.
But they're a team that actually was going that route with the traditional backup. It just happened that their traditional backup wasn't playing up to his potential, and they had to send him down to the minors to get some playing time to rediscover his form.
Yeah.
So now, but they're in that position where they're you know, shuffling people up and down, you know, Hartford to New York,
mm-hmm.
Changing who their backup is on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
And it's basically just to serve as an emergency backup while Lundqvist is having to play all these games. They would love to get a goaltender in there that, whether it's Valiquette again
mm-hmm.
or somebody else, that can start taking some of these minutes off of Lundqvist's shoulders. Because, I mean, let's face it, they're not playing well, so they can't really afford to be giving away
a game
points.
To a backup. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, so the Rangers have a situation, I think.
Said Detroit.
Detroit, the Rangers.
I think Detroit's fine.
What?
I think they're fine.
Really?
I'm missing all these forwards. I'm just looking at my standings here.
Well, yeah, but
Detroit,
but
Pittsburgh's allowed 87 goals, and so is Detroit.
I mean, I don't know if we'll be getting more to Detroit a little bit later in this show, but I think it's an area that they could improve, and I think that when they get some of their stars back, to have a little bit more solid goaltending would help. I mean, it was a problem for them last year. It's
a little bit of a problem. Right?
Well, actually, some would say no, it didn't end okay because they lost in the finals. But
true,
you know, it's I think they could use a little help. I think that's there. If you had to look at one weak spot, even with the injuries, I think it's still a weak
right.
spot. You know, the guys up front who have been filling in for the injured players are, you know, they're hanging in there.
This Rangers Lundqvist playing too much thing. These guys like Kiprusoff and Barkov play what?
What have they done in the playoffs?
Lundqvist is playing seven out of seven.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got the Olympics, and he's known for struggling with the heavier workload. He wants the heavier workload, but you know, it's shown that he gets tired. They do. They absolutely do.
I really think that the best situation for goaltending, okay, yes, you're going to have those rare guys who can play 70. I don't think that is this year because of the Olympics. Because all those guys we mentioned, Lundqvist, Nabokov, Kiprusoff, what do they have in common? They're going to be starting for their countries at the Olympics. There's no doubt about that.
So who can help these teams out?
Well,
you said Florida. We talked about.
Yeah, apparently Vokoun, that was a rumor coming out of Toronto, I believe, that Vokoun's on the trading block. Problem is, his contract is huge, so who's going to take him?
Yes.
But it kind of makes sense if the Panthers are trying to dump some salary. They have pretty good rookie Alexander Salak. They have Clemenson, who hasn't played that well for them this year, but so who knows what the thinking is behind Vokoun aside dumping some salary. Honestly, I'm not sure who is next in line in Nashville, but they have Dan Ellis, who was only two seasons ago. You know, it was one of those things where, hey, let's sign this guy. He's having a great year. And then the very next year he gets, you know, tossed out. And Rene he had a little bit of a slump to start the year. He's performed a little bit better now. So he's doing okay. There one rumor that it kind of involves the Flyers, because with Ray Emery being hurt for a little while, there's talk that maybe the Flyers need some goaltending, which that's, I guess, debatable because Boucher is...
And Graham.
No, not Graham. No, it's Backlund. It's a similar situation with what's going up in New York. He's not necessarily going to play, but he's sitting there. So there's talk of... There was one rumor that suggested, I believe this was out of the Philadelphia Inquirer, that the Tampa Bay Lightning tried to pawn Mike Smith off on the Flyers to get someone like Van Riemsdyk or Giroux. And that
nice
I don't – yeah, nice try, exactly. I think the writer in Philadelphia actually said something like, we don't know if Holmgren had a straight face when he said thank you, you know. But so there's that situation, because even I think Ninomaki's had the better season than Smith, and I'm kind of confused as to why they're not riding him a little bit more. I think Smith is still leading him in terms of playing time.
Because Smith's on my fantasy team, and I told them they need to make some use of him.
Yeah, well, he's not helping you much, is he?
Speaking of John Graham, isn't that like an MLS team signing me?
It's close to it.
Right?
Nevertheless, it happened.
And...
I don't know, you know. I mean, we could make that statement, and you know what? You may actually be more useful to an MLS team with your skills than Graham. But you know, I mean, it's can't
hurt.
No, I'm saying you can't dispute the facts. You know.
Yeah. And then the last two guys, the other two guys I was thinking of was Michael Leighton's. He's in the minors now.
Yep.
He actually cleared waivers. I was surprised.
Maybe
no one
not on
jumped
the call up though.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
The thing, if they call him up, then the other team's on the hook.
Yes.
So,
that
split. Yep.
That could work out somewhere. You know, just as a backup. You know, a good solid. That would be someone who would work, I think, for New York. Someone you could throw in there. He's gotten a little bit better. And then the other one that I've heard a little bit as far as may have to be moved is Peter Budaj, but that would have to be later on, to clear some salary, so that if Colorado's still in the playoff race, maybe they just, you know, fine-tune here and there, and, you know, obviously they're going to ride Anderson.
Right.
So
that was great signing for them, and it's obviously worked out well.
Yeah.
And, you know, hats off to Craig Anderson, who had a great year last year and earned that shot as being a number one. And Budaj probably had as many chances to be the number one over the last few years and couldn't hold it down. So it's good for Anderson to step in, and somebody that we got to see on a much, you know, a very regular basis playing in Florida last year.
Yep.
So I'm glad to see that that it translated well, because sometimes these guys that are, you know, part-time players and then all of a sudden, hey, you know what? Now the job's mine and I have to be the man, and it's a totally different situation. And I'm really glad that it's working out for him. All right, so we're gonna move over to the first of these deep research projects that Aaron put together, and this one was one that Aaron and I kind of come up with just based on some of our hockey conversations that we have offline, off the show. And as you can imagine, we probably talk hockey a lot, mostly because it's what we do, or at least it's what Aaron does. And then what I do with her, I guess.
I drag all the hockey fans in the office.
Right. So the conversation was on the point system that is currently going on in hockey with regards to wins, losses,
the overtime,
ties, and the shootout scenario. And the question that we kept wondering was, in terms of trying to figure out, A, if what currently is in place is the best solution, and B, if not, what could potentially be the best solution. So we wanted to see where teams would be if the point systems were different, whether it's a new system or whether it's going back to the old system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to, you know, thank Aaron for the tremendous amount of work that went into this, to putting all this information together for a topic of discussion.
Just so we can talk about it for
We can talk about it.
But hey, it's fun.
Hours and hours of
things.
Work just so that we could bring you this information.
I'm a number cruncher, so.
What was the date for this? The start of the season to last week?
December 6th.
December 6th, okay.
Yes, I put this together while I watched the Oilers-Panthers game.
There you go. What better to do in that same situation?
And if you were watching the Panthers, you would want to crunch numbers too.
Right. So basically we have a bunch of different scenarios, and I'll let you take the reins on this. But laying out the standings using different scoring systems.
Yes.
Take it away.
So the first scoring system we did was a 3-2-1. It was 3 points for a regulation win, 2 for an overtime win, and 1 for an overtime loss, whether that be an actual overtime or a shootout. The second one I did was 2 points for a regulation win and 0 for an overtime loss. So, for instance, it's kind of like the old system with ties, that if you got to overtime and you lost in overtime, you didn't get any points. Whereas if you did tie, you'd get at least 1 point. So we cut out the
overtime
the
loss.
Prize for just getting to overtime.
Right, and then the overtime loss includes a shootout loss.
Yes, yes. And then the final one was we went back and said, what would happen if we still had ties in the league? And the way that I figured this out was, if it got to a shootout, that was just considered at that point a tie. So if a team managed to survive in, you know, an overtime period, basically we wiped out the shootout, the points for a shootout. That just, you know, it was one point. And then again, going back, looking at the overtime periods, if a team won in overtime, they got the 2 points. If they lost in overtime, they got no points. So the thing that really stood out, I went through and tried to figure out, if a team was in the playoffs now, would they make the playoffs under a new system? And then the other thing I did was look through the best scenario, and I'm not going to go through all the 30 teams as far as which the best scenario was for each, because sometimes it was 2, sometimes it was 3, sometimes it was 1, and sometimes no difference at all.
Yeah, yep.
So the
probably something that over the course of a year you may have some more fluctuations.
You'd have to keep messing around with it,
right.
I think.
I'll make you do it.
Okay. Maybe at the end of the year we'll say, who would have made the playoffs if we had one of these other systems?
Right.
But the one that stood out as teams would be in their highest possible seed, it was the no points for an overtime loss. And 14 teams, their standings would have improved. And that, I think, to some degree was even teams that are at the very bottom, they even went up. Only 10 teams improved under the 3-2-1 system, and only 10 under ties. As far as the current scenario, only 6 teams, it was the best option for them, and then there were 5 teams that made no difference. And as far as those 5 teams, for the most part, it was, I want to say, the teams at the very bottom of their conference or the very, very top. I think it was like San Jose. It didn't matter what the situation was at the time. San Jose was top, you know, across the whole thing.
Yep.
But as far as some teams that were in the playoffs now, based on the current situation, and wouldn't make it, Tampa Bay was a team that Yeah, they're in it right now. And when I did this, they had 30 points. And under no scenario, under a new one, would they have made it. And I guess you can – well, I guess it doesn't really matter because the numbers have changed.
Right.
But they had kind of an obscene number of overtime losses. So that's where they were getting a ton of their points. And a team like New York, who wasn't necessarily getting those extra, you know, points by just getting – to overtime and
meaning
then losing.
The Rangers.
Rangers. Under all the other scenarios, which don't necessarily reward you for getting it to overtime, they were in every single scenario for the playoffs. They would have made it.
Right.
And then as far as the West goes, Vancouver, again, a team that's not in right now. I believe when I did this, they didn't have any overtime loss points. I think they had won two in overtime, but they had not lost any. They had very, very few overtime appearances.
Right.
Under the other scenarios, they're in right now. They wouldn't have been. And on the flip side, Dallas, a team that would be in the playoffs right now, when I did this, they would squeeze in at eighth. The only way they would have gotten in is under the tie scenario. But the other two, you know, again, it's the shootouts that are making the,
right. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this is all some very interesting stuff. And, you know, I still don't know that we've found, you know, what that right point system is. And a lot of it's going to depend on what people think should happen in overtime. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. do you get rid of, ties, you know, like is currently in place, and if you do, are shootouts the right way to go? I've heard people saying after the 4-on-4, go to a 3-on-3 and let hockey let hockey plays decide the winner.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I really don't know what the answer is, but I love being a part of the debate because it's just, you know, it's such a tough nut to crack.
Do you guys like the shootout anymore?
You know, it's tough. I get why it works because it appeals to everybody else.
You're a hockey fan. Do you like it?
I'm
asking you. Do you like the shootout?
I don't mind it. I don't hate it.
Okay.
I don't hate it, but I would like to see, you know, I get happy when a game ends in overtime.
Actual overtime, not shootout overtime.
Overtime. When there's, I mean, yeah, I get. I mean, it's, you can't deny the fact that there is an edge of the seat, you know, situation involved with the shootouts.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it works in the regular scheme of a game when there's a penalty shot. Everyone's like excited,
yeah,
because you know, you're looking for the creativity of the shooter and you're looking for the agility of the goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes there's spectacular successes on both sides of that coin. So that's why I don't hate it, because I enjoy to see that kind of skill on display. But at the same point in time, it you know, it's, as many writers happy to point out, this is a skills competition,
yeah,
and not what should be deciding games. So I would like to see, you know, some kind of a solution. Maybe I don't know if 3-on-3 is the best, but mm-hmm. You know, I don't have the solutions. I just don't. I want to see. You know, let's get creative. I mean, they were creative enough to kind of go to the shootout. So
yeah,
Let's see what else we can come up with.
I mean, I just don't like the fact that they get the same amount of points for winning in a shootout as they did in regulation. I like this idea of
the 3-2-1.
Yeah. I mean, and why don't you use them in the playoffs?
Yeah. Well, no. Shootouts?
I'm saying, if you use them in the regular season, why do you suddenly change the rules
that's
for the
sin.
Playoffs?
That's,
I mean,
sin.
In soccer, we do it the other way around.
Yeah, I know. Well, you just end games in the regular season. There is no
play
in the regular
like
season.
That's like what makes hockey, though, to me. I mean, to have
that
just
12 overtime.
Hopefully not
game.
12. But yeah, it's just the, you know, That's hockey.
That's why I like it, because yes, there is that the edge of the seat moment of the shootout when the player is skating in on the goalie. But when you're watching an overtime game, and whether it's 5-on-5, 4-on-4, 20 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever the case may be,
just as exciting.
Every shot is mm-hmm. potentially the end of the game.
Yeah,
you know, and I mean, you know, you're watching and you get all excited and you get to, oh, okay, all right, you know, missed. All right, now I can breathe again. And you have to, and you wait until the next time somebody, you know, winds up, and then you hold your breath, and then you see whether it goes in or out, and then you start breathing again. And I think when you're dealing with it in the run of play, as is the case in overtime, it's much more organic, you know, in the way that it comes about. And you know, you have time to, okay, all right, here comes the next shooter. Here he goes. He's doing his, oh, this is a slow guy. Okay, so now I have 15 seconds before he gets to the goal area. Oh, he didn't even get the shot off. All right, yeah, anticlimactic.
That's, I think, what annoys me is you might get, maybe once a week, if you have enough shootouts, get one of those spectacular goals where someone says, "Hey, I'm going to try to spin or put it between my legs or
Marek
do something."
Malik.
Exactly, and I think it's
Alice
gotten...
the Goon scores probably the best shootout goal of all time
from the most unexpected shootout score. It's kind of gotten boring to me because I think players are not necessarily doing the creative things that everyone thought they would do early on, and that they did do, I think, early on. I think you saw a lot more creativity. Now it's just the strategy of how do we beat this goalie, and if he's weak glove side, just keep shooting glove side, and there's not much excitement.
I also think people were expecting, like, all right, we're in the ninth round and it's 8-8. You know, I think people were expecting the scores to be a lot higher. Which obviously they didn't do their homework and look at the success rates of just penalty shots in games.
Yeah.
You know, or even take it to the playoff level where it's almost, you know, you never score.
Yeah.
So, I think that definitely played into part of that. So who knows? Maybe we'll get some 3-on-3 overtime where it'll be arcade style hockey and goals will be scored real quick.
I think I would I'd rather see a 3-on-3 and just going back to the standings thing too, I think I'm getting tired of seeing teams that really aren't good get rewarded when they really don't deserve it. Okay, so you can play 60 minutes and keep a score tied. How is that really exciting? To me, it's just not theoretically you could play, you know, all your games in a season, lose everyone in overtime, 82 points, you may, depending on what happens with other teams, you may still have a shot at the playoffs. I think there's something fundamentally wrong with that. So.
Yeah, now we're getting into, you know, different rules for different eras. So now let's say, for argument's sake, we move to 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. So now you've got an extra overtime period that nobody else in the history of hockey has ever had. You score a goal there to win for your team. Do you get that goal to add it to your stats?
Well,
They don't count in the shootout, right?
No, they don't. But overtime goals counted when it was, yeah.
Right, but you have an extra, this is an additional overtime period, right? Because you have the 4-on-4.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Going to 4-on-3. See, I was thinking
just go straight to the 3-on-3.
Straight to 3-on-3. Yeah.
Maybe that's an option. These are all very extreme concepts. But, 3-on-3 hockey, which does happen in overtime if the penalties work out that way. Excuse me, but we don't mean to be talking about this as if it's something that's being heavily considered coming to a professional hockey rink near you.
No, it's throwing it out there, and you guys feel free to jump on our message.
Maybe that's what we do to at least what we ask you to do is to kind of sound off on either the point system or the shootouts and other proposed overtime scenarios, such as moving to 3-on-3, whether it's following a 4-on-4 or straight after the 60 minutes. So, Aaron, what's our new shiny podcast page?
Our new shiny podcast page is at cbssports.com/NHL/podcast. And you'll find
all our Firefly Serenity fans out there.
Yes, you'll find our podcast archives, the latest episode, and a message board. Feel free to, jump into the discussions we throw up there. If you have questions for us, again, if you have something you want us to dig into, do some number crunching, throw that out there. If you have any questions or, topics for discussion or think, you want us to talk about something, throw it out there, and we're more than happy to do that.
That also includes questions for our fantasy team, such as Ross Devenport, who's here with us today. You can all obviously reach them through the product itself, but why don't we make that available to our fantasy users as well, and we can send those over to Ross just to try and get you all the information you need. And we have one question here from someone, Ross. I'm going to start off with your segment going into this question. Is that all right?
Sure. I want your answers to this as well.
All right. So it says, I have Tyler Kennedy in a 10-team, 25-player team dynasty league. And I'm starting to think about dropping him since he hasn't contributed much since he returned from his injury, and also considering he's back playing in the Penguins' third line. But I don't want to give another team a diamond in the rough. In parentheses, am I overrating him? Is it worth keeping him and wait until he gets hot again? How good could he really be in the future? And this comes from Alfonso in Mexico.
Mexico!
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, Mr. Kennedy, he's really been struggling lately. He just came back from injury, what, so 10 days ago? No points in December so far. He's only playing about 13, 15 minutes a game. Obviously, there's, you know, he's behind a ton of talented forwards in Pittsburgh.
Right.
I didn't pull up his minor league stats, or junior stats, I should say. So I'm not sure how he was back then, but for now he's just stuck in a bad situation in Pittsburgh. A 10-team keeper league, he seems a little far down the rankings to be holding on to.
That's what I was saying. I actually had Kennedy on my team, and our league is, what, 12, non-keeper.
Right. Two
goalies,
yeah.
Two goalies,
so you were reaching,
hate.
Is what you're trying to say.
What?
So you were reaching, then, is that what you're
what?
Trying to say.
By going
after Kennedy.
Well, Kennedy, yes, he started off the season hot, and I thought, okay, yeah, maybe I'll go with this. He did see a very little bit of time up on, I believe it was Malkin's line, but it was so brief, and that's, I think, when he was having his hot streak, and then, yes, he went back to, the stall line, and then he got hurt. I agree. It's hard because he is behind so much talent. It's kind of like Jordan Staal. Yeah, and Jordan Staal's a great player too. But again, he'd probably be a second line center elsewhere, get more of an offensive role.
That's the thing.
But
he's
not going to get that
in
Pittsburgh.
Looking at Staal and then looking at if you want to look at Kennedy, who's on his line, Staal and Matt Cook at times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is not a line that's built to put the puck in the net.
Mm-mm.
You know, I mean, there are abilities on the line that can do that, but when they're out there, their objective is to prevent
the other team
from scoring. And hopefully that creates chances. More often than not, it probably creates power play opportunities for those on the first two lines if they're doing their job well, mm-hmm. and they're frustrating lines that maybe are less defensively capable, they'll probably be more inclined to pull a player down that is frustrating them. So, yeah, I mean, currently the situation is not good. Now, if this was a team that didn't have such great youth and depth in youth, then maybe you could say, okay, you know, Kennedy's got a chance to move up. And you know, I mean, he's playing on the wing some, so you know, there's a chance they've got some older players on the wing, especially on the right wing. Guerin won't be there forever,
mm-hmm.
So maybe that gives him the chance in the next few years to move up a line. Certainly, playing with Malkin, you'd have to think that he's going to put the puck in the net a little bit more or have some more chances. Maybe even as a playmaking wing, since Malkin can score so efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to say dump as quickly as you guys are from a keeper perspective. The thing where it gets difficult, and Ross, I give you and Mike Hercom and all our other fantasy guys and all the other sports that they cover a lot of credit, because you don't have the value of seeing what's the rest of this guy's team look like, as well as what does the rest of the league look like and who else is available to look at. So I'd say don't weigh him against what he's doing now. Weigh him against what else you've got in terms of future depth at either wing or center. That would be my gauge.
I was going to say, if there happens to be a guy like, let's just say Duchesne, because Duchesne is having hot. You know,
sure.
I think I'd pick up Duchesne, which actually I did, over Kennedy. I think the one benefit to having Kennedy, if there's nobody out there who really, you know, does it for you as far as there's no doubt in my mind that this guy is going to be great down the line. I mean, if there's no John Tavares, there's no Duchesne out there, those are just two guys sticking off the top
and
of my head.
Who you would have to think in a keeper league probably are taking.
Exactly. But for Kennedy, the one thing that even for this season that is worth keeping in mind is you never know what injuries will take place. And I think a guy like Kennedy could very well slip up, you know, or move up into the the second or first line in Pittsburgh.
Right,
I think,
right.
I mean, if you look at, if you're just going to shift players up, you know, I don't know that, you know, Staal necessarily goes. He may if Malkin gets moved out to the wing and is playing next to Crosby.
Right.
But again, even that, Kennedy could end up moving up. So I don't think he's a bad asset to have. If there's no one out there, he's worth keeping. But if there are, you know, no-brainer guys out there, you know, again, just throwing out a Tavares or, you know, a Duchesne, I think that you go with those other guys.
Sure.
You know.
It really depends on – keeper leagues vary so much from
league to league. Yeah, that's
the
tough
amount
one,
of
right? Keeper leagues are tough.
Excuse me.
What else you got for us, Big Guy?
I got a question for you, too. I'm just going down the injury report here, as I do every Monday before lineup deadlines. And two highest guys, and this is two free agents in our 12-team experts league that are available. And I was thinking, which of these two guys would you rather have? Johan Franzen, who's out till at least mid-February with his knee problem.
He was on my team. I'm hoping that no one grabs him.
He's owned in 67%. Or you got a guy like David Booth, who's owned in 60% of the leagues, but who knows? Which of those two guys would you rather have? I think it depends on where you are in your league. You know, if you're struggling a little bit, and Booth, you know, Booth might be back by the end of the month. He might not be back till, I mean, February, March. Who knows?
I'm gonna say Franzen, and I'll come up with a solution that works to deal with the short term.
Yeah.
Just because not only the skill levels are different and the teams they play for are vastly different.
Sure.
But even from the fact that, I mean, Booth got laid out so bad and he's struggling so much to try and get back. And, you know, I feel for the guy. And he's the type of player that if he's missing that instinct that has made him successful to this point because of that hit. You know, that's going to maybe he'll skate a little bit slower. Maybe he won't be as aggressive and feisty as he can be when he start, which allows him to use the skill that he has, his speed and, you know, his ability to score. I mean, last year was just a fantastic year for him. I don't know that he can come back and be that same player at least this year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. At least this year. I mean, it's just such a tough thing to come back from. And like I said before, it hasn't been an easy run back for him as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he's going to be able to get back and regain that form. Somebody like Franzen, he's been hurt before.
Mm-hmm.
He's played well before. And he's come back and played well before. So I can see him doing it. I'll go for the short-term answer somewhere else and have Franzen to bank on when he comes back.
Yeah, same. I agree. And the thing with Booth...
That's why I went first.
Oh. Yeah, with Booth, I think the concern is that, you know, you may grab him now. Maybe he comes back in 2 weeks, gets just bumped slightly, and he's back on the, you know... back on injured reserve again.
Sure.
Because it doesn't take much for a concussion to you know, to come back. And
I know about that.
You know what, I was just gonna say, I can speak from experience.
I think all three of us have had concussions in this room, probably way too much.
Yeah, but seriously, I think that's for me, that's what happened. I you know, ended up hitting my head on the ice, and you know, stayed out for a week, thought I was fine, went back, played again, just got bumped slightly, and was, you know, starting to see stars again. So I think with something like that, you know, concussions, you don't really want to take a chance with. Franzen, I think a knee injury, not to say, you know, blowing your ACL is a simple thing to return from.
Exactly.
You know, but I think it's a little bit, you know, easier. You know, he can maybe take a day off here or there, whereas, you know, a concussion might sideline you for a long period of time. The other, I think, benefit to having Franzen over Booth is I think Franzen has the better players around him.
Sure.
You know, if he ends up on a line with, let's, you know, you just look at their centers. He ends up with Datsyuk or he ends up with Zetterberg. He's going to be in some good shape. Yeah, Booth, you know,
he doesn't have to move maybe as well as he did before if his knee is bothering him. But he's the type of player that he knows where to be.
Yes.
So he'll get himself to the right places, and he's got the finishing touch with the stick to us to do.
Yeah.
So.
And he has the guys to set him up with
exactly.
That.
Yeah. He doesn't need to be the man. Whereas right now, if you look at Florida's lineup, you look at how they're playing, it would be probably, hey, let's get back to where we would hit Booth, who's flying really fast and skating really hard and takes one in the net and just, you know, tries to score.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not playing to the abilities they showed last year where they just missed, you know, making the playoffs, which is an annual thing. you know, it's going to be tough for him if he gets back in there. And he, you know, competitive guy. He's going to want to be that player that helps, you know, get some more consistent offense going. And, yeah, it's just a rough gig for him.
Yeah.
And then finally, as Aaron, we were talking about before the podcast today, we haven't been here for a while. And goalies, we seem to talk about every week. But as Aaron knows this year, and me too, how key they are to fantasy success.
Correct.
And
I hate our league.
I just realized we've been pretty lucky. We've been pretty lucky with health this year in goalies. I think only Happy Boulin is the only one that's missed more
LeClaire,
than a week.
But he's cursed anyway.
True. Yeah, well, yeah, you have to expect that from him.
Right.
But yeah, but I mean, that his instance was he was just sitting out a game
to
rest,
so
and the poor guy gets hit in the face with
the
puck. I mean,
oh,
that's
goodness.
Just that. I
Luckily
don't know
for
if
his
he
owners,
talk.
He's coming back either the end of this week or next week. But I was looking at some of the situations that have developed over the last few weeks, and I wanted to get your opinion on. You saw the two goalie situations with certain teams. Who you would rather have going forward? Atlanta.
Oh, don't start, because
I'm a big Hedberg fan. He's got some good stats this year. And whether he's going to hold off Mr. Pavlik.
Well, I have Pavlik, so
I hope whoever plays tonight plays extremely poorly against my New York Rangers.
Well, I sat Pavlik today.
So we're going Hedberg there?
You know what? I don't know. I honestly, the reason I grabbed Pavlik when I did was they were going back and forth. He was the hot hand. They're just going on the hot hand. I think it's one you just have to keep watching week to week and say.
That's a tough one. Those are always tough. Whenever teams decide to do that, which is their prerogative, and they have every right to do.
But it kills
and sometimes,
you for fantasy.
Sometimes it works, you know, from an organizational standpoint. But, yeah, exactly. It kills you for fantasy. And I think about a few years ago when Detroit had Hasek. And Osgood going back and forth and the, you know.
Oh, no, Osgood and – it was just like 2 years ago, right? Was it Osgood and Conklin? No,
it was Hasek's last year.
Okay.
And you know, they were, say, 40 games into the year, and they both had like 12 wins or 13 wins or something.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous, whatever it was. And so clearly from an organizational standpoint, Detroit – had it going, right? Their goalies were playing fantastic. The team was playing great. And, you know, it worked for them. But I remember, I think I took a flyer on, not Philadelphia, on Hasek and had him in my lineup. And I was so torn because when he was in there, I got what I needed from him. But it was, you know, if a team had four games during a week, I'm thinking, all right, probably two of those are mine.
Yeah.
And I think I still wound up going with him because his two-game performances were fantastic, and it was probably better than a guy who may play four games and not, you know, come away with the same numbers. But yeah, it's a tough gig in fantasy. And as I said before, I don't envy these guys. Mm-mm. You know, Ross, Mike, and our other fantasy guys in the other sports. It's tough, but they're good at what they do.
What about Tampa Bay, Smith and Nitimaki?
Well, Smith's getting playing time.
He's been getting more starts lately. And
but Nitimaki's had
game.
The better numbers.
That's
what surprises me, is that why are they not playing Nitimaki more often?
Are they showcasing Smith?
Or
who's going to take him?
Is it you know, it's just...
Sorry, Mike Smith, not a fan.
Yeah, he just...
I've said
the
it
guy,
before.
The guy had, like, his whole career and off coming into this trade was off of, like, a 3-month period where he played well.
And he was playing with a decent Dallas team.
Right, and then, you know, here it is. Here's your shot. You know, again, this is not exactly the Craig Anderson situation, but it's close enough to where you could say he had his shot, doing well. Now, granted, he got sent to the, you know, probably the worst place, one of the worst places in terms of defensive culpability in Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, where goalies except Nikolai Hobby-Wulin go to die.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the team when Hobby was there is completely different. And they were responsible and, you know, different setup and everything. So it's the guy just, when the team hasn't been there, or when the team has been there, he hasn't been.
Yeah.
And that's where you can say, okay, this is on Smith. This isn't just Tampa Bay struggling. Smith has struggled mightily coming over and has not lived up to the billing of trying to be the guy that, hey, finally, we've got the goalie now that we want. We gave up, you know, our big player for him. And and it just, you know, it really hasn't worked out. And not much in Tampa, you know, since that or around that time when all the changeover was going on has generally worked out, but hopefully with Stamkos really seems to be, you know, coming into who he is, you know, was thought to be. And not that he needed to do it day one, you know, game one, but he certainly is showing
but
abilities.
There's balance with that because LeCavalier is not having the year that
right,
people expect a guy who scored 50 to do. So it's just kind of a weird situation there.
Still trying to figure out why he's not in Montreal at this time, I think.
Who knows?
Based on last year's very vibrant rumor mill.
Yes, yes.
And then finally, before we go into the Battle of Ontario this evening, Gustafsson and Toskala.
Oh boy.
Not Gustafsson. Not.
No?
I think. Well, he's. I think too much of a risk.
Issue.
Yeah.
Boy, this poor guy.
Yeah. I mean, and I was just reading today. I mean, God, yeah. You talk about poor guy.
He came with a gigantic buyer beware sticker, though. I mean, this was not unknown. I mean, they knew and they took a chance. And the guy may go on to have a very long career after all this,
but
certainly
right now it's
when Toronto needs some steadying in the back end.
Yeah.
He's unfortunately not able to provide it.
Well, it's not. I don't think it's that he's not able to provide it. I just think it's on such a fine. I mean, he's had two heart surgeries already.
Right.
And
well,
the thing that I'm reading is the next time he has a problem, they're shutting him down for the season.
Right.
I mean, obviously, that's the way to go. You don't want to take
that
risk. You don't want the poor guy to collapse on the ice. I just think, you know, I think the potential's there for him to be good. I don't know. With Toronto this year, they're just, I don't think you're going to get a lot of wins out of either of those goalies. But even for anything, just with Gustafsson, I think it's a huge red flag. You know, as much as you might want him, you got to.
So you just deal with Toskala and his mediocre abilities or performance at this time?
Well, I don't know that I would. I had Toskala, I dumped him. So.
Right. Basically, if you're a goaltender and you've been picked up by Aaron Brown, you are not going to have a good and or healthy season.
How about anybody I've picked up? I had Franzen. Vanek got hurt for a while.
Yeah.
Wah.
Solani's hurt. Oh.
We can't win every year. But going back to guys collapsing on the ice, I don't know if you saw that video. We must give credit to the Swedish official. It wasn't in the elite.
Squeeds?
It wasn't in the elite.
Squeeds,
it wasn't in the elite league.
Okay.
I forget which league it was in Sweden, but there was actually a video of it. The guy collapsed on the ice, had a heart attack on the ice.
Oh, my goodness.
One of the players. And luckily, one of the officials was an ambulance worker.
Oh, wow.
That's
so
convenient.
He knew
got
CPR
down there,
or did whatever he had to do.
And brought him back.
Wow.
Wow.
So
we all have visions
guy.
Of.
Cherepanov.
No, for Detroit.
Fisher.
Yeah, Yuri Fisher.
Well, Cherepanov too. I mean, that was
We don't have. I mean, that was, you know.
But you still, if you saw the video, it was like, oh, goodness.
Yeah, he had the, you know, he sat down and then, you know, kind of slowly
over.
Started going
over.
But you didn't get to see, which is ironically part of the controversy. Which you did see in the Fisher incident was, I mean, they're CPR right there on, you know, just on the side of the bench and the, you know, the cart coming over and everything. I mean, that was, you know, I mean, I'll never forget that one as long as I'm watching hockey.
Well, if you listen to this podcast before fantasy, before the lineups for Fantasy Week 11, then make sure, Greg, that you set your lineup.
I set mine kind of cringed.
Before the deadline and,
you know.
And good luck.
Meetings, folks. I got meetings to go to.
I know you are very important, man.
All right, so Ross, thank you very much. Awesome to have you back, and we look forward to having you back, if not later this week, because I think we're gonna do another show later this week, but certainly next week.
All right,
we will let you know. You're of course more than welcome to stick around for the rest of the show, but I know we kind of went a little bit longer than we wanted to, but I want to kind of run through quick the last call out we made to our listeners was to talk about your country's team, or what was the...
It was America's team.
America's
Who
team,
is America's
right?
team?
And,
yeah.
and if you agreed with, you know, the Canada's team poll that we put the results up for.
Yeah, we didn't get much response out about the Canadian team. I think
right.
a couple people said, yeah, it should be the Leafs. That makes sense. And,
sure.
You know, our buddy Canada Kegger, he kind of filled us in. He is from Winnipeg. And the gist of what he said was that, you know, Canada's regionally divided country, with all parts being completely different. And he said that with the Canadians and Leafs having the histories that they do, he said it's not surprising that they are.
Came out on top.
Yeah.
Sure.
And he also pointed out, I'll just quote him here. He says, now that we are in the modern age, you would find that Canadian cities which have an NHL franchise would associate more with their home city than Canada's team. That mentality. Look at the cities that had a team, such as my hometown Winnipeg Jets, and you will find a city first mentality as opposed to something else. The Hamilton area has been clinging to hopes of getting a team just to get their hate on against Toronto.
And, you know, I got to say something to Canada Kegger here. I get what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And trust me, I think everywhere you operate on a, you know, local team first. Now, I'm a New York Giant fan, as painful as that may be to admit, based on last night.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all know that in football, the Dallas Cowboys, mm-hmm. it's got that America's team thing. Now, it's not that I root for Dallas because of that fact. It's
yeah.
just kind of one of those things. And sometimes, you know, maybe it's just self-appointed, and that's how it can,
yeah.
and it just sticks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, you know, they're Texas, America, you know, guns and cowboys. I don't really know how that came about. You know, I mean, the Yankees, okay, there you can make a case, like
yeah.
like even saying Montreal in Canada, where it wasn't, but could be,
mm-hmm.
Certainly was high. The rich tradition, playing, you know, long tenured team in the league,
mm-hmm.
tremendous amount of success, more success than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So there you can kind of make the case, okay, the Yankees, America's team,
yeah,
because of that. Montreal could be Canada's team, or at least
yeah.
it's understandable
yeah.
why they're in the top two because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But some like Dallas, they're not the most prolific team in the NFL.
I think that was a, yeah,
you know,
definitely self-appointed.
Yeah, but nobody really kind of said, no, we're America's team over here, or you know, we should be over here. So, yeah, I mean, I guess in the absence of opposition, they became the de facto America's team. So why don't you get into some of the answers we got for that.
With some other ones here, actually, I might have to have you read one since my wonderful printout decided to eat some of the message.
Okay. You let me know.
Let's see. I'm probably going to mess up our user's
DeGribcha?
Name. DeGribcha. Yes, I'm
yes,
guessing.
Yes, we believe in phonetics here at
yes.
CBSSports.com.
He said, if I had to nominate a city to be Hockey Town USA, I don't think I'd hesitate. St. Paul, Minnesota wins hands down. Don't get me wrong, quite a few people in Chicago and Detroit knew their stuff, but I was in St. Paul in July, and more people spoke to me about the Wild than they did about the Twins. Even in the elevator in the hotel had hockey facts on it. Having been to Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, I would have to say that St. Paul was a more impressive hockey city than any in Ontario or Quebec. Props to the Wild, your city rocks. And you know what? I kind of have to agree. I haven't been to Detroit. I haven't been
sure.
to Chicago. Montreal, yes. New York, yes. New Jersey, all the ones in the South for the most part. And I, when I was in St. Paul, it was amazing. You would just have a hockey jersey on in a bar, and people would come up to you and just start talking hockey. And it was just fantastic. I mean, it was just,
you could
really sense that
sure.
that's what they live for up there. And
I get that. And again, I'm going to kind of throw a disclaimer out there and say that maybe St. Paul wins Hockey Town USA. But this is about America's team, and
yes.
there's no way
no,
that despite
I,
its fans and despite the regional greatness of hockey that comes in and out of that area, that the Minnesota Wild are America's team.
Yeah, and one user, which I don't have his thing here, we just kind of pulled the best of the best. Someone did point out that the Wild have not done anything, so I do agree with that. Another one that I enjoyed, and I wish we could queue up some Brass Bonanza right now, but JEagle87 writes in, clearly America's team resides in none other than Hartford, Connecticut. No fan base was more loyal to a franchise or had a better theme song than Brass Bonanza. No fan has ever lived longer with as much hope and still looks up to the rafters of the Hartford Civic Center with as much pride as anyone else in the USA and Canada. Bring back the Whalers.
You know, that's why we constantly try to say on this show how awesome
our hockey fans are.
Not only hockey fans, but our hockey fans, because they consistently demonstrate how passionate they are about the sport with which we follow.
I guess this is kind of for another Hockey Town USA, but Hyper577 throughout the Boston Bruins. He says, no, I'm not just saying that because I'm a Bruins fan. I'm saying it because the Bruins were the first American hockey team. Other people will say Minnesota because the state is rich with hockey, but I can say the same for Massachusetts. Massachusetts has a ton of colleges and universities along with high school and town leagues. I'm assuming he meant Boston with that because, I mean, obviously with the bean pot, you know,
There's no doubt. If you think of, hockey hotbeds in America, we can just lump Massachusetts in there.
Yeah.
And, just say that area, is fantastic. Or you can say, the New England area versus the central U.S., the Michigan, Minnesota, Dakota situation, and then you got, your Vermont, New Hampshire, Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, Boston, or Massachusetts, rather. Can you tell it's late in the day? But, yeah, I mean, he makes an excellent point. I mean, these are valid points that could make Boston work, whether it's them that ultimately would get chosen or could be determined as that, it's debatable, but every point made here is excellent, and the only problem is that those same points could probably be made for, I believe, what our next person has to say.
Yes, you might have to help me with this. Is what my
okay? I'll take
you
over.
Can,
this
you
is
can
fill
it in.
Fly Flyers Fly, much like Canada Kegger, and Aaron, you may be able to say how frequently some of these other users.
We didn't hear from Pitt Sports 85.
Yes, Pitt Sports. we're very sad that you have not come back to us, but we certainly feel. I believe Jay Cuervo 96 was a long time poster as well. But Fly Flyers Fly, we used lots of times last year in our Q&A stuff. So he said his vote went to Detroit since they are the American team with the most cups. After that, it was the Rangers because their fans are diehard. Boston and Chicago a few years ago, nobody knew their cities gave a damn about their teams, let alone the entire U.S., whereas the Rangers fans are always there. They're always
there. And very entertaining, too.
Yes, yes. Yes, they are. He goes on to say, I would love to say the Flyers, but I won't kid myself, but I can be damn happy knowing that our team has great fans and always tries to put competitive team on the ice. But I will say, when the Russians came to play in the NHL, the Flyers sure as hell were America's team.
This is true. Back
which
in
is,
the
exactly. So
70s,
you know,
I believe.
Maybe we don't have a one definitive answer, but maybe we can kind of take it on bit by bit. We'll give some credit to Boston and perhaps New York for having the tenure. And we can throw Philadelphia in there for their
but we're forgetting
for
Detroit.
Their
and I know that the Detroit fans are probably going to, send hate mail.
Yeah, because, Detroit's got the tenure as well and the success.
Yeah.
And they've got that grassroots situation.
Yep. Michigan and hockey up there. I mean, even with the colleges too.
That's what I'm saying. That's that grassroots thing. There's tons of great players coming out of that area. There's tons of great players going into that area for the colleges. I'm not sure that we can pick one. Jay Cuervo 96, we mentioned before, who's a Rangers fan, voted for Detroit as America's team. Saying Detroit, Boston, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and the Rangers in that order. But as far as his comments on Detroit, so they're always a solid team. despite some rough spots 20-plus years ago. You don't hear much in the way of controversy. They win a cup every so often. They have great players and a long history to back it up. Solidly managed from ownership down, and what all NHL teams should aspire to be. The Islanders had their chance. If they could have been anywhere decent the last 25 years or so, they could have maybe had it. But I think the one comment that he makes that really sticks out to me is that that they're what all NHL teams should aspire to.
I think it's the truth.
It's the truth for the Detroit Red Wings of the last 15 years, or 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Obviously, but I mean, you can't really look at it an organization's entire existence and base it,
No, there wasn't everything perfect going on, but even some of the earlier years, you have to remember that's let's face it, prior to the 80s, the team that dominated was just Montreal. It was, there was almost no other team that really could squeeze in there. So I guess we don't really have an answer. We have our opinions.
Arguments made, probably.
And all great arguments, too.
Yeah, but probably the best arguments. The one thing that we talked about, we were trying to actually debunk New York as America's team because it's so easy just to go to the large market.
New York, yeah.
But we saw the turnaround and the positive spike that the NHL got when the Rangers won the Cup in '94.
Yeah.
And certainly that can't be discounted as to the impact being had on the country. Mm-hmm. So, let's say, if Vancouver wins, obviously, I don't think we see the NHL get the huge spike in popularity that it had.
No.
Even with the Rangers just being in the finals. But let's sub it out. Let's say it was New York-Detroit, and let's say Detroit wins. Does it get that same kind of a spike? And, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it gets, a bump, but maybe not as significant. Then are you trading on the New York Rangers, or are you trading on New York?
Yeah.
And the fact that when New York's involved in something, generally, I don't mean to be, I'm not casting, anything over every kind of, possible conversation, but generally there's increased, awareness.
Yes.
And increased awareness means some kind of boost of popularity.
Yeah.
All right, so that's going to do it. We went a little bit longer, but we've had a lot to talk about because it's been a little bit, we had a little bit over a week since we last talked to you, so we wanted to make sure we covered some of the things that we wanted to. But we're also going to be back later this week, shooting for
Thursday, hopefully,
to get back to you with some more NHL news. Don't be afraid, don't forget to go to
cbssports.com/NHL/podcast.
See, I'm remembering it now. It's only been a couple times. Respond to our latest
discussion, throw out debate your thoughts on the point system. Do you like the shootout?
And
how would you change things?
Yep. We want to hear your thoughts. And as always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.